So this is the last lecture in chapter 23. It's called Natural Selection, the Mechanism of Evolution. I want to remind you, natural selection is a two-step process. And even though Darwin came up with the idea of evolution, it was really the mechanism that made him realize how powerful his idea was. And the idea, of course, he came up with is natural selection. And in order for natural selection to occur, variation must exist in a population. Once you've got variation, then nature selects the most fit individuals to survive and reproduce. And I want to highlight that idea of survival and reproduction. It's not just survival. It's not just reproduction. It's both. If you survive to 100 years old, but you never reproduce, then your genes will never make it into the next generation. So you've got to reproduce as well. Let's take a little closer look at variation. The only real source of new variation is mutation. And then once you have variation, sexual reproduction is a way to shuffle that variation, kind of like shuffling a deck of cards. Once you've got the variation, it would be great to preserve it because you want to maintain it if you can. And there's two main ways to do that. Diploidy, and this is a way to hide the recessive alleles. And then there's balanced polymorphism, which is the way to preserve two different alleles. And we're going to look at all of this in detail over the next number of slides. So let's begin with mutation. As I mentioned, all mutations are really the origin of all variation in a population. I do want to make a note, though, that's very interesting. More recently, we've discovered that there's another way to get variation within a population, and that is through lateral gene transfer, which is also known as horizontal gene transfer. And this is kind of Darwin really didn't know about this. When Darwin conceived of the idea of the tree of life, right, where there's always a branch point and another branch point. And if you're out at the end, like we are, we're a little twig at the top of the tree of life, you can follow your genetic heritage all the way down, back to the original primordial ancestor of us all 3.8 billion years ago, right? But it turns out that there is transfer across lineages horizontally. And this is generally done, it can be done in a variety of ways. Viruses can pick up some genetic information from one group of organisms and bring it into another. Sometimes bacteria can do this. So this does happen occasionally. It's not even really mentioned that much, even in textbooks these days, at least beginning biology textbooks, but it is a way. Creation of new alleles in the genome, that's really where most of the mutations occur, right? And everything else is simply rearranging this new material. So we look at sexual reproduction, and that's simply the way of combining genetic material from two different individuals. And so you get new individuals with all kinds of new combinations of alleles. We have different names for this, like recombination, sexual recombination, genetic recombination. It's all kind of the same thing. It's just mixing up the genome. It's not creating anything new in terms of raw mutations, but it's just mixing up what's there. There are three different ways that this is accomplished. Independent assortment, crossing over, and then random joining of gametes. And I'm going to go into detail into each one of these over the next few slides. So let's start with independent assortment of homologous chromosomes. On this next slide, you'll see a really great illustration of this. And sometimes a picture is really worth 1,000 words. So if you look at this picture, it kind of says it all. And they use color in this picture really nicely. So you can see on the bottom illustration, there are two pairs of homologous chromosomes, and they come in a pair, blue and red. And as you see on the bottom picture on the left-hand side, you'll see the blue pairs are on the left, and the right, the red pair are on the right of that cell. And so when they split in the process of meiosis, you get blue in one gamete and red in the other, and that's what you end up with. But remember that homologous chromosomes can line up independently, and if they flip, like let's say the second set of chromosomes forms in the body, so we look over to the right a little bit, and we'll see we've got blue and red, and then right below it, instead of having blue and red, now we have red and blue. So they independently assorted. Well, when they do that, during meiosis, the blue and the red separate, and then the red and the blue separate, and when you look at you end up with gametes, you've got a combination of red and blue chromosomes, and so you've really mixed it up. And this is something that Gregor Mendel actually discovered using his pea plants, and his pea plant experiments. In the next slide, we talk about crossing over. Now, crossing over, once again, this is a really nice illustration which kind of explains what happens. When homologous chromosomes line up next to each other, they actually share genetic material. And if you look at this picture, and they've nicely, once again, colored the chromosome blue and red, you can actually see that there's a literal exchange of genetic material, so that about on the third panel down on the left, you'll see that the blue chromosomes have little pieces of red that have crossed over. And then on the right, you'll see the red chromosomes have little pieces of blue chromosomes that have crossed over. And then so when you make your gametes really do have a little bit above chromosomes, or the other chromosome. And what's remarkable about this is that this thing we call crossing over, these crossover events happen about 2 to 3 times per pair of homologous chromosomes. So this happens a lot. And so this is a really great way of mixing up the genetic material. On the next slide, we discuss the idea of the random joining of gametes. Obviously, one set of gametes comes from mom or the male, or let's say the female mom, and one set from the dad, the male. And which ones join is a completely random event. You have lots of sperm, which one actually ends up fertilizing, completely random event. Which egg happens to go through ovulation, that whole process, in any particular month, completely random event. Okay, so if we look at it as a quick summary, sexual reproduction really does mix it up in 3 ways: independent assortment, crossing over, or the random joining of gametes. If you have asexual reproduction, there is absolutely no variation. In fact, in asexual population, everything is a clone. They're all identical. So, for example, if this room, let's say this room, were one big petri dish, and one of us, you know, there was an original bacteria that came in here, and they went through asexual reproduction, and those two went through it, and then the four, and we ended up with, like, let's say 30 individuals in this room, kind of like we have now, all of them would be identical. Identical genetically. That's the result of asexual reproduction. So it doesn't mix it up at all. So sexual reproduction is a good thing, mixes things up. But once you've got that variation, you don't want to lose it. You want to preserve it. So in the next slide, I did just mention there are 2 ways that we preserve variation in population. One is called diploidy, and the other is called balanced polymorphism. And in the following slide, I go through diploidy and talk about it. Remember that diploid organisms are organisms that have 2 copies of each chromosome, right? So this becomes significant in a heterozygous individual, because an individual that's heterozygous for a particular trait will have 2 different alleles for that at that particular gene locus. So, for instance, In our illustration here, we have a gene for flower color, but we have two different alleles. We have an allele for pink and an allele for white flowers. And so what's interesting is that in this example, the pink flowers are dominant over the white, which are recessive. And so the white allele can actually hide from natural selection because it's not expressing its phenotype in the adult, right? So it can maintain itself in the population. This is really important. If you're a haploid organism, there's nowhere to run, there's nowhere to hide. Because since you don't have another chromosome to cover for you, every allele will be expressed in the adult and can be therefore selected for or against. So this is one of the reasons probably that diploidy emerged in, you know, sort of the evolution of life, is to help preserve some of this variation. Now, another very cool thing is called balanced polymorphism, and it's simply a way of maintaining different phenotypes in a population. If we break the word down, poly means many, morpho means form. Morpho doesn't mean to change. You know, people go, oh, morph. Morph means to change. No, it doesn't. Morph comes from the Greek or Latin root, which means form. That's what it means. So what this means is polymorphism simply means many forms. And in balanced polymorphism, what we've got is we've got two different phenotypic forms of some single trait that happen to be maintained in the population. Hence the term balance in the term balanced polymorphism. Neither of the forms is actually selected out. They're both there. And there's three ways that we can maintain this balanced polymorphism: heterozygote advantage, hybrid vigor, frequency-dependent selection. In this lecture, I'm not going to go into hybrid vigor or frequency-dependent selection. You'll need to learn those on your own. I am going to mention heterozygote advantage, however, in the following slide. And this is the famous example that you're probably all aware of from a previous bio class. In the case of a heterozygote advantage, you have individuals that are heterozygous at a particular gene locus. You know, like let's say, you know, we get big A, little a. And they survive and have better success than either of the homozygotes. That's even better than big A, or little a. And the classic example of this, the one, you know, if you're putting, you know, circles and arrows and highlighting your notes and saying, learn this, this is an example you all should learn if you don't already know it. Because the College Board loves to test on this. It's the hemoglobin and sickle cell anemia story. And I think you all know it. It basically, the story is that there is a change in the hemoglobin is a protein, and there is a slight change in the hemoglobin. It's actually one amino acid that's changed. It causes the hemoglobin to be sort of slightly, has a different form, it wraps up a little bit differently, causing the red blood cell to no longer maintain its nice form, and it starts to form this thing, kind of a sickle shape. And if you're homozygous recessive for this, then you're in bad news because you're in really bad shape. It's bad news for you because your red blood cells take on this really radical sickle shape. The little red blood cells get stuck in your capillaries and cause all kinds of problems. And these people end up, it's a genetic disease, and they end up dying. It's very bad. But if you are heterozygote for it, so you only have one of the alleles that, you know, has this anomaly, then you've got slight, you know, some of your proteins aren't good, but not all of them. So maybe your cells will show some slight sickling, but not enough to really make you terribly ill at all. But the wonderful thing is it protects you against malaria. So hence, you know, what you see is, particularly in places like Africa, where there's a high incidence of malaria, when this genetic mutation occurred, it gave an advantage. As long as you don't have the genetic mutation as a homozygous recessive, as long as it's only one of the two alleles, then you're actually protecting yourself from malaria. So it's this wonderful thing. And so what you end up with is this idea of balanced polymorphism. You get individuals that are heterozygote, zygotes for this particular gene, and they're protected against malaria, and they really don't get sickle cell anemia. They might show some slight symptoms of it, but it's not bad enough to kill them. And it's very common in Black Africans because that's where the environmental pressure is. You don't see this that frequently in, let's say, northern white Europeans. And the reason why is because they didn't evolve, there wasn't any evolutionary pressures in northern Europe because there wasn't really malaria up there like there was in Africa. So this wasn't an advantage for northern Europeans. It is for, Africans. So, interesting story. If you want to know more about this, see pages 255 and 438 in Campbell. Recommend if you want to fill in those details, please look this over because this is something you will see on a test multiple times this year. And like I said, make sure you know hybrid vigor and frequency-dependent selection as well. Some other things I'm not going to have time to lecture on will be stabilizing selection, directional selection, and diversifying selection. You can learn about it. It takes you about 5 minutes. Just read the book. Real simple. Okay? So you can do that on your own. And also, one other thing that you can learn on your own is sexual selection. And this is something that actually Darwin came up with. It's actually pretty interesting. I'll kind of whet your appetite for this one. You may have actually wondered this yourself. It's like when you see a peacock. What's a peacock all about? It's kind of crazy. Why does this animal have these incredibly beautiful long feathers that don't seem to have any... I mean, in terms of a predator, how many people have seen peacocks? Raise your hand. Okay, most of you. So like when a peacock is not displaying its feathers, these feathers are dragging along behind it. That can't help it when it's trying to get away from a predator. So why does it have these? Read about it. It's called sexual selection, and it's in your book on page 441 through 442. Very interesting stuff. Okay? That's it for this lecture.